everyone. Again, this is Gordon W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This is conducted on a frequency of 146.835 megahertz. PL is 151.4, and the repeater is located in Pearl River, New York, serving Bergen County, parts of Rockland, Passaic, New York City, Long Island, and of course, Lower Hudson Valley in southwestern Connecticut. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. Okay, nothing heard. Well, good evening again, everyone. I think last week was the Democratic debate / comedy show. I think that kind of depleted our ranks last week quite a bit. Politics notwithstanding, I can't be watching that stuff at this time of the year. It's too early in the process for me to get excited. In any case, hopefully we're here to talk about amateur radio and electronics and computers and telecommunications, our operational experiences, our operational aspirations, and of course, things we want to talk about for sale or for swap or wanted items, and of course, this might even be a good time to just talk about, you know, stuff that strikes your fancy and you want to talk about it just to learn more about it if you're curious. So, with no further ado, stations whose call signs begin with the letter Whiskey, please call K2BAR. With your call sign, your name, indicate whether you have a question, comment, confusion, now question, comment, for sale or swap item, and some combination of those things, or none of the above, please call K2BAR.
Whiskey Alpha 2, India Sierra Echo, and Bob, no traffic.
Good evening, Bob. Welcome aboard. Any other whiskeys?
WP2 TQT, Art in Oradell.
Good evening, Art. Now, I know we're not watching the debate last week. You had visitors. All righty. Any other whiskeys? Okie dokie. How about Novembers? All righty. And Kilos?
K2BAR. This is 2 Golf Mobile, Andrew.
Hi, Andrew. You want to try that again? Your call kind of got butchered. You were dropping out of the repeater a little bit.
Sorry about that. Another try. This is Kilo Charlie, 2 Golf Mobile.
KC2G. Very good. Andrew, did you get a different call?
Before about a year ago, I was November 2 Echo Oscar November, but I've been on this net before as KC2G.
Yeah, you have. It just struck me. I never asked you that question. All right, very good. And the other Kilos?
Kilo 2, Lima Alpha X-ray, over.
All right, T2LAX. Welcome aboard, John. Anybody else? All right, Alpha stations. Okay, it occurred to me that I never asked anybody's intentions, and no one gave them spontaneously. So, does anybody have anything for the net tonight?
Oh, I just do a roundtable, Gordon.
Oh, I think we're going to do that. Absolutely. In fact, you get the first announcement, because I know what you want to talk about. You got to talk about tomorrow, I guess. I think that'd be a marvelous thing to do. And we'll go from there, I guess. Let's see. Just before we do that, anybody on the Echo Link? This is K2BAR.
NJ2BS. Repeat.
Okay, just as a reminder, the Echo Link is Kilo Delta 2, Bravo Kilo Delta - Lima. KD2BKD - Lima. And you're welcome to use that as well. We generally leave some pauses in there so people can get in on the Echo Link. All right. So no further ado. Any other check-ins before we go to roundtable mode? Say, actually, have a couple of things to report on too, but I'll go last. Anybody else for the net? Alrighty. T2LAX, it's your ball. T2BAR.
K2BER, and then this is Kilo Zulu Mouse X-ray. Just a quick announcement, because this really isn't technically related, but we are doing a disaster scenario organizational planning meeting tomorrow, Friday, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Bergen County OEM, 285 Camp Gaul Road, and basically it's a tabletop discussion considering a major hurricane-type scenario and how we all kind of fit together and how that looks. And that's going to help us prepare for a field exercise later in October 12th. Other than that, I'd like to talk about my Mosley 20-meter antenna. What do you think, Gordon?
Post haste and promptly. So, all yours.
So, I've been running a 230-foot loop, inverted delta loop is my primary antenna. Because I run the maritime net on different schedules, I had the need for a more directed type 20-meter net, 20-meter band antenna to narrow down to find wandering boats out in the middle of the ocean and be able to connect with them. So after much research, and I'm very limited on space like much of us probably are, and I debated much about doing different antennas, but I ended up looking at the Mosley. It's only weighed like, I think it's 10 pounds, 12 pounds, and it works pretty well. I put it up on a 20-foot aluminum military 2-inch pole on a rotator with a bearing. Holds up really good, and I am very impressed by the performance. My loop antenna still has a much broader omni ability to receive stations, but when I want to zero in for a weak station, it raises it up almost 10 dBs. It's got a front to back 17, but that really doesn't count. It's just the difference between the loop and being able to bring it in, and it's really made a difference. I'm pretty impressed, and I guess that speaks for beam antennas, that they do really make a difference. And that's all I've got. Over.
That's pretty cool. That is very cool. So, two elements, fairly closely spaced, but at least on 20, and yet it works fine. And that's a beautiful thing. So, what is that called, a T32?
That's correct. It's Tango 32, and yeah, they make, several different antennas. If you got the space, I would go for a bigger one. All I can say, bigger is better. Over.
Yeah, so it's sort of like the two-element version of a TA-33, which, pretty good stuff. So good for you. Good for you. I'm glad you're doing it. I'm curious, you're actually in net control for the hurricane net?
No, I'm net control for the Maritime Mobile Service net, and we are a message service primarily for maritime vessels, and I guess a big part of what we do is read the weather on the half hour and worldwide. Over.
I gotcha. Very interesting. So, yeah, the maritime service net. And that's on, I guess, 20 meters. That's very cool. I'm curious, as to how much power you run to do that, especially since you're up here in the Northeast.
I run typically 500 to 600 watts. Depending on propagation, I routinely receive Hawaii from here, and I do very well in the North Atlantic, and of course the Caribbean. Anything close to me, I'm right over their head, so to speak. Over.
Yeah, so you have to go to 40 and 80 and use a wire. Yep, yep. Okay, very cool. One last question before I send it around to others who might have some questions about it. What is the maximum power handling of that of the T-32?
It's 1,000 watts FSD, and I think they publish only 250 watts RCTY. I think it handles more than that, but I think they've had problems with some operators operating it out of tune, so they're being conservative. Over.
Yeah, it makes sense. And, you know, if you're using modern digital modes other than teletype, your cycle time can be something less than 50%, maybe 40-45%. And more importantly, you can get away with the lower power anyway. You know, at 250 watts, you're a big gun on, PSK-31 I can't think of the mode that, what's the FT8 or FT4, there we go. Had a brain fart moment there. But yeah, that would definitely be interesting. Alrighty. Anybody else have questions, comments? Okay, I then have another one, and that is, how much does automated messaging take away from the Maritime Service Net traffic handling, as opposed to, you know, what I'll call the there's a certain warmth and handshake about hearing a voice and things like that when you're at sea, especially when you're alone at sea. So I think there's an element that you really can't replace with automation. But a lot of guys have used various email gateways, as you know, while at sea. In fact, a lot of the automated station operation objections have come from people who are saying people got their ham licenses just so they can get private messaging services for their boats while they're at sea, but they're really not hams. They don't actually talk on the radio and that kind of stuff. So it's an interesting perspective that's kind of complicated the automatic operation within amateur radio, because you've got two conflicting communities, or two different intended communities of automation. What I call the true appliance operator, and then those who want to have other kinds of support nets for legitimate ham radio, you know, activities, as opposed to pseudo-commercial private messaging. And it's that latter group that kind of soils the water for the automation crowd who want to do that within amateur radio. Thoughts?
K12AX. Winlink is primarily used by ships at sea, and they use it primarily for position reports that are actually displayed so that anybody, family, companies, et cetera, can access that data and find out where their boats are or their families are. They're out at sea, and they can also do text messaging. The Maritime Service Net is basically there when things fail, but you have a ham radio that you have on board, and we have had some successful rescue-type coordination events, and I think primarily we provide a warmth that they know somebody's there. Over.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, that's awesome. I think there's something much more, shall we say, relevant to, you know, to that hearing that voice, being able to elicit that voice, that's reassuring while you're at sea, and especially if you're in a distress situation, it's even more, meaningful. Very good. So, Yeah, I mean, I've played with Winlink and thinking about doing some more, but that's a whole other thing. We were talking about other services and other interoperation stuff, but on top of everything else, I have a separate antenna and a separate radio at home here for shares. So I also have a share station license, as well as my ham license. But that's through work. Alrighty. Anybody have any more comments on HF, Operation Maritime Operation, etc.? Alrighty. Well, back to you, John, and see if you have anything more you'd like to add.
Nothing else but mention about the Paramus repeater. I saw an email note that apparently the Paramus repeater went down or was shut down because of a station, hopefully accidentally, was keying the repeater for an indefinite period. I don't know if it's back up. Spread the word. Check that your radio is not keying the repeater. Over.
Oh, it's still down. Well, I didn't realize that. I thought the repeater had a hung transmitter. I didn't realize that the, there was a user problem, which probably explains why I can't key the other repeater either, because my signal from my mobile is probably not stronger than the interfering signal is on the input to the Franklin Lake site either.
Yeah, I don't, Gordon, I'm not experiencing anything with any other repeater, but my understanding was there was a previous event where a cat had knocked down a book, and the book was sitting on somebody's microphone key switch. Over.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. That's lovely. So have they done the direction finding to find the person?
Yeah, I don't know how far they've gone with it. I just, like I said, I saw the email note. It's worth passing around. Obviously, if the radio is working on this repeater, you are not the culprit. Over.
Well, yeah, I can tell you I'm not the culprit because right now there are no operational 2-meter radios in my house. They're either stacked in a box right now, because I pulled them all out for various field exercises over the summer and never put them back. Or they're in my mobile. And since the other mobile is chirping away on 144.39, I don't think that's an issue either. So I think we got that covered. But yeah, I tried to get into to both machines and to no avail, which was kind of disappointing. Alrighty. So yes, the 7-9 is down. I guess now due to a input signal, we could probably go DF it and find it.
Roger, it could be a fox hunt.
Yeah, only the fox hunting facilities we have around here. Seen Barra and Cherlo, and I don't understand why the world didn't go out and go find the sucker. Unless they know who it is, and they just can't reach him for whatever reason.
All right, Gordon, K2LA, clear. Let's hear what other people have to say. Over.
Roger. Okay. Thank you, John. All right. KC2G, I think you're next. Andrew, go right ahead.
All right. I've got, actually, first let me check, make sure I'm getting in good from this location.
2-5, old man.
All right. I've got a couple things that I'm going to give a brief summary, and then I can expand on any of them if requested. The first is this weekend I went up to K1TTT for my first time and operated VHF contest and had some fun with that. The second is the ionospheric mapping website that I've actually mentioned on this net before. I kind of gave it a broader public release a couple weeks ago, and I've got a bunch of people using it. And the last is I've got a 30-foot fiberglass pole coming, and I'm going to try to put up a new vertical in the backyard.
Well, that sounds splendid. So how tall is the pole?
It's 30 or 35 feet, so not super high, but manageable.
So are you going to do one of those 31-foot vertical things with a tuner at the base, or are you going to run a wire up the fiberglass pole and then out like a flag antenna and then feed it from the base or feed it from the angular apex at the top? I mean, what's your plan?
I'm going to try a few different things, but the silliest thing that I'm going to try, but I'm going to see if it works, because my doublet is actually great on the higher bands, and what I need is something for the lower bands in very limited space. So I'm going to try to put 60 feet of wire on a 30-foot pole, and then another 50 feet of wire horizontally from that, and make something that is a Frankenstein of a helical vertical and an inverted L, and see what it does.
NJ2BS, repeat.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha. I saw a variation on that theme done not long ago where someone took, I guess it was 3 sections of the aluminum military poles on an insulated base, and then more military poles, fiberglass ones above it. They were all pinned together so that the darn thing wouldn't twist and turn and do all kinds of nasty things in the wind. And they did spiral up above that point and then had a horizontal section. The idea was, I think they wanted to go closer to 40 feet. I think they wanted to get to 43 feet. And so by having the first 12 feet or so in aluminum, they bought themselves, you know, some shall we say, flexibility. Maybe it was the first 3 or 4. Maybe it was 16 feet or maybe 15 feet at that point, because you lose about 4 inches per joint, so that's about a foot out of 16. So you get about 15 feet in the air, and then the rest is fiberglass. You can certainly do that. That's always a nice thing. And spin it around too, but if you've got an all fiberglass one, that's fine. Be very interesting. I know that another possible source of a 25-foot pole, if you need a second one or you need another cheap pole, it's actually a lot sturdier than those little skimpy poles can be sometimes, is to go on the aft to Harbor Freight for like $50. They have a 25-foot flagpole that is pretty stout, and it'll hold a flag at 25 feet. It's certainly a 3x5. I don't know if it'll hold a 4x6, but certainly a 3x5 it'll hold. So you can put some serious wire up there and not worry about bending it over too badly with the horizontal, or if you will, lateral pull from a wire going off in another direction. So if you do need a second pole to complement yours, or maybe to hold up an end without sagging, that might be another thing to think about, Andrew.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's always something to think about. We'll see when I get mine. I think it's a pretty heavy-duty one. It's actually supposed to show up tomorrow, and I think it will be able to handle the lateral load, but if it doesn't, then it's just going to be a vertical or a helical vertical.
Well, what's the diameter of the top section?
I think it's still an inch at the top.
Yeah, that would give me pause. I think you'd have to drop that down a couple of sections before you had enough diameter to give yourself something that's sturdy enough for a lateral. Even one that's not heavily tensioned, just, you know, light gauge wire type stuff, or, you know, wonderful wire they use? It's instead of stranded wire. It's sort of like a braided mesh. So what is that? I've seen that used in antenna wire, and that's wonderful.
Not coming up with the name, but I do get the concept.
Yeah, maybe one of the other guys knows. What's that? That you know, it's untinned copper, but it's a mesh, not a. It's like really small strapping, but it's, you know, it's tiny, and but it's like a flat antenna leave. Is it flex weave? Is it called?
K W2TTT WA2IC. Is it lens wire? That's basically individual strands that have a coating of magnet or enamel to make it magnet wire, and it's sort of twisted semi-randomly. So each wire is independent of the other, so cut down on skin resistance. Over.
You know, that's not it, but yeah, that would be another good choice. No, the stuff is a sturdier wire. It's got some good tensile strength, but it's sort of like a flat strapping like you'd use for ground strapping, except it's really tiny, and it's used for antenna wire in some applications. Anyway, if anyone knows the name of it, please call. I'm going to see if it's flex weave. All right. Anyway, Andrew, that sounds really good. You said something else, too. You were going to do this antenna. What was the other thing you brought up first?
The first was I went up to Massachusetts and did September VHF from K1TTT.
Yeah, so tell me about his site in Peru, Massachusetts, and how that really works out for a VHF contest, and what bands did you operate, kind of equipment, antennas, feed lines, what was involved there? And what's the site? I thought the site was a lowland site. I didn't think it was a hilltop site.
It is. It's not really hilltop, but he's got four towers, I think, ranging from 80 to 150 feet, and the VHF-UHF stuff is on the top of the 150-foot tower. So we did 6 meter, 2 meter, 70 centimeter, and I attempted a little bit of 23 centimeter using my own equipment off of his back deck, and almost got one contact, but didn't.
That's interesting. So essentially, it was a three band effort.
Yeah, and well, we went in as multi-limited, which is a four-band limit, so if I had gotten something on 23 centimeter, it would have counted.
Sure. That's great. That is absolutely wonderful. By the way, I'm not crazy. It is called flex weave. And if you look at it, it's a little different than what I expected, but you can tie knots in it. It comes in a number 14 gauge. It's 168 strands of number 36 wire, or a number 12 gauge, which is 259 strands of 36 wire. It's excellent for quads, dipoles, long wires, rapid deployments, spooled out antennas. It has a high UV resistant PVC jacket of either clear, black, or camouflage green, and is also available as bare wire. Okay, I've only seen it as bare wire. That's pretty cool. I forget the HF antenna I have from Australia, but that sucker has a piece of Kevlar running through it as the supporting thing, so it's like flex weave with Kevlar. It's owned by work, and I kid you not, it comes on these two little reels, and it's really nice with a ball, and it's an HF dipole. It has a 3-to-1 SWR from, I guess, 160 meters through 10 meters, and that antenna, for, you know, plus or minus, all it's various SWRs up to, as I say, just under 3-to-1. cost $950 dipole. I mean, it's crazy. And it's, you know, it's a long wire antenna. It's with a center feed, but it's meant for military and for, you know, severe conditions, type tactical stuff. But you might want to look at the notion of flex weave as part of your antenna configuration. Davis RF apparently sells it, flex siphon weave. And as far as operating K1TTT, that's pretty cool. I have a standing invitation to operate at Dave Olean's station up in Maine from our good friend N2CEI from Down East Microwave. But it's very good. I'm just curious, what do you have on 1296?
I have a ICOM 910 with the 1.2 module and a 12 element Yagi from Comet.
Okay. I have a Down East Microwave transverter I bought, you know, 20 years ago, and a I don't have the antenna up right now, but I have a really long loop Yagi and a slightly shorter loop Yagi. For 1296, I have two, and both are down right now. But I also have a 903 and a decent-sized loop Yagi for that as well. You know, maybe like 30 elements or so. And somewhere I have a 2304 antenna. I don't know where my 2304 transverter went, but that transverter and amplifier, I had 40 watts on 2304 at one point. Much to my chagrin, it has disappeared. I think it got thrown out and been a basement clean out, which makes me a little crazy, but that was 15 years ago, and I just have to suck it up and deal. But, you know, right now I've got enough 2.4 gig gear to choke a horse, so. But it's very good, very good. That's a lot of fun. Anybody have any comments for Andrew? Oops, did I guess I timed it out. So, very nice. As I said, I have some stuff on 2304 and 903 and 1296. So, it's all good. Anybody have any comments for Andrew? Why am I unkeying and not seeing the repeater?
You're working fine, KC2J.
Okay, I was not getting a tail anymore. Oh, I know why. Maybe the APRS was in the other side of the vehicle was chirping away. Sorry about that. All right, anybody have any comments for Andrew on his adventures, the VHF contest? I made a grand total of four contacts, by the way, on 2 meters and two on 2 meters and two on 440, working K2BAR, but or K2AMI, I should say. That's all. Anybody have any thoughts?
K2LAX, I can only say I used a 12-gauge flex weave for my loop. Over.
Insulated or raw copper?
No, covered PVC black.
Okay, so there's an endorsement for you, Andrew.
All right, sounds good. And yeah, a couple closing comments. We got a little bit over 100 QSOs on VHF, which I'm pretty happy with. And about that $900 antenna, I thought wire dipoles were supposed to be cheap.
Not when the military makes them, or they make them for the military and similar agencies. Was it OT3? God, what the hell is the name of that company? It's an Australian company that makes them. You Google around, you'll find it. It's ridiculous.
All right. Well, that's all I got. And actually, I've been sitting in my driveway for some time, so I'm gonna sign. But it's been good talking with Annette, KC2G.
Thank you very much. Anybody else have anything to follow up Andrew's topic? Alrighty, I'm not looking at what their sales site is. Oh yes, I do. Maybe there's sales information here. I can make it big enough to actually see. I'm looking on my phone here. So the 12-gauge stuff,
Black Jacket, blah, 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 is 40 cents a foot if you want less than 100, but it's 32 cents a foot at 1,000 feet. So, $320, I guess, for 1,000 feet of the stuff. Yeah, I might be tempted to buy that at some point. That sounds like a really good, badass type of way to go. John, you're very satisfied with yours on your loop?
No, it holds up really well so far as flats and through a lot of storms. I use pulleys, pulley swivels, you know, like they use for sailboat ropes, and bungee cords to keep the right tension on the wire so it doesn't break.
Yeah, and did you use the number 12 or the number 14 stuff?
Number 12, 14. I tried 14, that wouldn't hold up, not 230 feet.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you. Okay, that's good to know. The other thing I noticed in this month's QSD, by the way, this month's QSD is outrageously good. It just landed on my doorstep today, and among other things, there's a thing called a Wolf Hang, and basically it's this crazy conglomeration of PVC pipe and 45 degree angles, such that you can use it as a way to create a slip sleeve over a branch so that the rope you put over a tree branch will never bind because you're now running the rope through the PVC tubing. Very, very cleverly done, and I think if you use the gray stuff, it won't be too fragile. It'll hold up pretty nicely. But there's that. There's a Raspberry Pi article on Direwolf, which is APRS. Actually, it's two APRS articles, one on Direwolf and one on a product review from a tracker, a Tiny Tracker 4, I think it was. Very nice stuff. And then there was a review of a 2200 kilohertz transverter. And there are a couple other things in there. There's just the articles just were all very good. They were all over the place, but they were all good. So I thought this month's QSD, if you got it, is very worthwhile. Alrighty. Any more on this topic before we move on to the next person? Alrighty, WB2TQT, Art, your ball.
NJ2BS, repeat.
KQBAR, WB2TQT. Good evening, Gordon, and everybody else that's on the net tonight. Glad to see that the weather is getting a little cool. Gave me a chance to get some projects done inside of the house today. Let's see. I guess there was no two-meter net last night. I totally forgot about it, but I didn't know the repeater was down. It probably, if the repeater was down last night, there probably was no two-meter net. So maybe somebody might want to comment on that if they know for sure. But I missed it anyhow. Other than that, I'm thinking of selling my Drake B-line. That I bought brand new many years ago, and it includes the T4XB transmitter, the R4B receiver, the power supply, and I believe it's the MS4 speaker, and I have a D104 mic that I used to use with it, so if anybody's interested in that, pretty sure we can work out a reasonable price, and I'm willing to let it go with that. Technical questions at this point. I am thinking about maybe trying to resurrect my 2-meter beam and just trying to figure out where I want to put it. I think, Gordon, you said you had a pole or something that goes through your roof and your house. And I'm just wondering how you might fasten that up around the roof so it doesn't wiggle back and forth. I know they have those, I guess they call them, they're like a pipe shroud that goes over the vent pipes that the roofers use. I guess something like that could be used to shield water from going in, but you would still have to shore up the mask to stop it from flopping around and doing damage to your roof. Let's see, Portable Day was a lot of fun. Was a fox hunt there. I enjoyed that. Didn't take part in it, but some guys did take part in it, and they did find the fox. So anyhow, I'll turn it back to Net Control, KE2BAR, WB2TQT.
Okay, very good. WB2TQT, WTTTT. If I drop the mic real quick, it's because my son's going to just park in the driveway. He's probably going to say hello, because I'm actually still in the mobile. As I started the other net in the mobile, and never got out in the truck. Alrighty. Very good, Art. Okay, so how did I do that? So it's in the corner of my office. The house was being totally remodeled, and actually the back half of my roof was being full dormered at the time. So I have two supporting walls for two shelves, one up right underneath the ceiling and the other one just above the desk level. Stand by. Alrighty. So basically what I did was, it's in the interior corner of an L-shaped desk. And the desk is 44 inches deep on one side and 32 on another, on the L piece, if you will. So it's in that corner of the office. So I basically had them, when they were doing the framing, before they even did the sheetrock, I had them build two little corner shelves with extra 2x4 supports, one right below the ceiling, and then one about desk height. It's actually just below desk height. And because I built the desk around it ultimately. And so it goes up, and so the upper one functions as a plane bearing, as does the aperture going through the roof. And it hits a vent, it's a 3.5 inch, 1/4 inch wall, or 3/8 wall, I can't remember which, aluminum post that goes through a 4 inch PVC vent pipe. So I skirted the vent pipe both at the shingles, and then 1.5 feet above, I have one of those flanges floating on the actual mast. And I do that so that to keep rain from going down the mast and into the house. Further, the top of the mast has what they call a fern coat, which is essentially a pipe adjustment, a pipe transition at the top, and it goes from 3.5 inches to 3, and I have a short nipple of PVC with a cap on the top. It actually doesn't sit quite square because I had to stretch the fern coat over the top of the aluminum mast. So it's actually off at a little bit of an angle, so it looks jaunty, is the word. It's like a jaunty-looking hat-like structure. But that gives me a 3.5-inch heavy-duty walled mast right through the roof. On the bottom shelf, it sits on a bearing, a rotary bearing. Actually, you won't quite go in because it being a 3.5-inch mast and it being a 3.5-inch bearing, it doesn't quite fit in the bearing, so it sits in the bearing cup because, you know, it's basically beveled. The bearing itself is beveled. So the mast actually just sits on the bearing. And then when I've had a rotator on it, it's been on the floor of the shack underneath the mast. I basically stuck a lighter gauge mast underneath it to a homebrew rotator. And the rotator had no indicator system. Actually, it does have an indicator system, but I never wired it up. And basically, it operates with a center off left or right kind of
toggle switch, and the rotator itself has micro switches to cut off the voltage at the extremes. So that works really, really well. Right now, that rotator is not in place, and the mast underneath, the extension mast to go to the floor, is not on. In fact, I've got a omnidirectional antenna sitting on top of this mast right now, which is hilarious. But a 10-meter vertical ground plane. But it does rotate if I wanted to. It's kind of neat. So there you go. It's probably more than you wanted to hear, Art.
No, it wasn't. Very interesting. So your rotor is inside the house. So I assume the mask is going through that rubber weather boot that's up on top of the roof to keep the water out. So have you had problems with that rubber boot? Because it sounds like the mask is turning inside that boot, so that the rubber boot is acting like a lip seal, I guess, and eventually everything wears out. Over.
NJ2BS, repeat.
Okay, so in order to keep the thing from flipping and flopping, there are effectively two plane bearings. One is the width of a 3/4-inch piece of plywood. That's the upper shelf. The lower shelf is just a cup where the bearing sits. And then the upper plane bearing is actually a 4-inch piece of PVC pipe that goes through. So the mast itself goes through a pipe that is anchored into the roof and through the roof into the shack. And so that puppy doesn't have anything but maybe a little bit of side motion, actually very little side motion by the time we get through that, because of the plane bearing hole on the plywood really kind of keeps it kind of tight. So it's very vertical by the time it gets to the PVC pipe. And then the PVC pipe that comes to the roof has a fixed, flange with the aluminum and the little rubber thing under the shingles. That's stationary. The second one rides on the mast and rotates with the mast, so it never really ages. I mean, I checked it a year ago, and it had no signs of degradation at all, which was kind of amazing to me because it's been up there for 15 years exposed to the UV. And so all I did there was, it's a rectangular flange, so I kind of bent the corners down a little bit so it kind of operates like a little bit of a skirt. So there's no friction on the rubber gasket at all.
Oh, good. Okay. So you have like a little, you have a mask, aluminum mask going through a PVC pipe, and I assume the tolerances between that aluminum mask and the PVC pipe is pretty tight, tight enough not to let a lot of water and bugs and other things come through, and a lot of slop, too. And then you have a little umbrella on top of the, mounted on the aluminum mask over that PVC pipe, and that stops the water from going in, if I'm correct?
Yeah, so if you think about it, a 3.5-inch thick wall aluminum mast is 3.5-inch OD. Sitting inside of a 4-inch piece of PVC, there's a 0.5-inch of play, but this really amounts to a 1/4-inch of play on opposite sides. So it's not a lot of play. And for whatever reason, I don't get bugs in my shack. It's funny you should say that. But I actually made no provisions for that part. I made provisions for snow and water. In fact, that little skirt, that your umbrella, like you were saying, is high enough over the roof so that if I get a 1.5-foot of snow on the roof, that's about where it would start to touch. So the PVC comes up a little higher than normal in order to, allow it to be clear of the roof itself, because, I didn't want any problems with snow. And, of course, again, I haven't turned it in about 5 years now, so but I'm sure it'll be fine if I have to. My indicator system was kind of crude, and that is because I could see the mass in the corner of my desk, in the corner of the shack. Basically, I oriented the mast where I wanted to and turned it 90 degrees and using a beacon, actually, a 2-meter beacon and at one point, and used that as a way to do it. And I basically just put marks on the mast with a magic marker, and that was sufficient. Yeah, I put four marks, and I just kind of wiggle it back and forth, and fine. Pretty impressive. By the way, I'm not the first one in the area to do this. Charlie, WA2C, what the hell was your earlier call? He used to live in Ridgewood. C-R-something-C. Oh, gosh. I can't remember. He was a buddy of Butch's, N2T or WA2JSW. He knew we got 2 meters, but he was more of an HF guy. But, yeah, it was pretty fun to work him, because he had one that went through his attic all the way down to his basement. His shack was in the basement. His rotator was on the floor of his basement. He was about 18 inches off the floor of the basement on a metal frame.
Oh, my God. It's got to be quite a sight. All the way from the top of the roof down to the basement. Well, he needed a very long mask. He probably had to put a few together to do that. Sounds good, but I don't know if you told me, what type of antenna are you using on that mask?
Right now, I literally have, an X99, I think they're called, 10-meter antenna. They're also popular with CBers, but they do tune on 10 meters, and actually I have the ground plane kit for it, although a lot of people run them without the ground planes. So it's my 10-meter vertical, and I'm going to be more obnoxious about it because it has a normal bracket on it, not one that can wrap around a 3.5-inch mast. I mounted it on a smaller mast and just sistered it up against the rotating mast for now. And that was about 5 years ago, and I haven't had a chance. My health hasn't been good enough to feel good about messing with that thing. Let's put it this way. It's going to be very interesting removing that mast, because here's what has to happen. Basically, it has to be lifted out of the of the hole, and if you think about it, I have a 1/4-inch or 3/8 wall aluminum mast. It's about 13.5 feet tall, and maybe long, taller than that. Let me think about that. It goes 5 feet or so into my shack, maybe. Yeah, about 5 or 6 feet into my shack, and it's a good, oh, I don't know, maybe it's the best part of 18 feet or so tall. So, you know, it was, just for your reference, it used to be a piece of a boom for an 80-meter two-element Yagi.
Okay, well, it's going to be pretty strong if it's going to handle 80 meters, that's for sure. Yeah, I'm still in the preliminary stages of trying to figure out where and how I want to mount this 2-meter beam. I don't know if I want to put it back up on top of my tri-banded, but I don't know, I may. What I've learned over the years, as I got older, servicing these antennas is very important. And if you're getting older all the time, getting access back up to those antenna points is getting harder and harder and harder, and more dangerous. So I thought if somehow I could put a mast up on top of the, through on top of the roof, through the roof or whatever, and maybe turn it into something like a fold-over, so that I can get access to it. But I'm just in the preliminary thought process on it, and we'll have to see where it goes. So with that, I'll turn it back to you, Gordon. Don't have much more to say other than that. So K2BAR, WB2TQT.
KWB2TQT in the group W2TTT K2BAR. Okay, so a couple of things. What, you have a tower up currently, and or what support do you have underneath your tri-bander?
Okay, right now I have the original mast up that held my tri-bander and the 2 meter beam, and it's up. And I have a an extension coming off the side of it that I added to it, and I'm hanging my 80-meter inverted Z dipole off of that. And I'm thinking of putting the tri-bander back up on top of that, and I'm going to have to get the tree guide probably in to get that put up. That is, if I can resurrect this tri-bander too. I may not even want to do that. I might just get another antenna. I'll have to see how the traps are in this thing. That's another question. How do you check traps to see if they're good without putting the antenna all the way back up? If there's any way to do that, that might be interesting and save me a lot of time and trouble. But that's what I have now. The mast that I have is mounted to the side of the house over the garage. And it's tied in with galvanized steel brackets, heavy steel brackets, that are designed for holding pipe, clamped there. And then it's guide wired down with stainless steel aircraft cable. And it's probably up about 40 foot. Now, I used to climb up that pipe when I had the pegs on it, but I took the pegs down and probably we'll redo them at some point in time, but so many other projects going around the house haven't had a chance to get to it. But that's what I have. I have a pipe mounted to the side of the house, right above the garage, and totally it's up at probably about 40 foot. Back to you. Oh, back to net control.
Okay, so this mast is sitting on your roof and then bracketed to the, you know, over the garage roof and then bolted to the wall of the house, which is tied to your garage.
Correct.
Okay, and what diameter pipe is it that you used to have climbing pegs on it?
3-inch OD.
Okie dokie. All righty, my kind of construction. And as you said, they weren't normal TV brackets. They were really burly brackets that are meant for holding pipe, not antenna masts. Like, this isn't holding up your TV. It's on the side of the house. You've got a tri-bander and a 2-meter antenna on it. Okay, here's a couple of thoughts. The whole thought of climbing that as you get older is absolutely terrifying. I'm just going to say that straight up. And that's even with really good climbing harnesses. I don't mean those waist things that will get you killed. But even with pegs, boy, I don't know if I'd want to do that anymore. Guide or not, I'm not feeling the love there. And just from a safety viewpoint. So, having said that, is there a place where you could put a tower on the ground or a mast on the ground and pivot it over?
Yeah, but it wouldn't be up at the same height. And, you know, height is very important for, you know, VHF. So that's why I was thinking of the roof. And I thought about putting it on the ground, and the problem is tilting it over always seems to be a problem. Because there's either a tree there or something else. So I spent a little bit of time thinking about that and surveying my lot and trying to think about where I could put something like that. But that's why I'm looking at the roof now.
Okay, well, if you can secure that mast adequately,
such that you can, you know, properly guide it and keep it properly bracketed.